Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Reluctant Guardian by Alexis Morgan, narrated by Miles Miley. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. Psalm 127, verse 3. 1. Stop whining, dog. Go back to bed. Hoping Mutt would do as he was told, Connor closed his eyes and tried to drift back to sleep. The dog wasn't having it, though. He hit Connor with a blast of doggy breath and then licked his face. When that didn't work, Mutt followed it up with a soft nip on Connor's arm. That had Connor jerking upright in the bed, knowing that neither of them would get any more sleep until he figured out what his furry roommate was trying to tell him. Mutt might have reached the end of his canine career, but there was nothing wrong with his instincts. Something wasn't right. Okay, I'm awake, boy. The dog backed away and restlessly paced the floor as Connor yanked on his jeans and then shoved his feet into his shoes without bothering with socks. Not knowing what the situation was, he also grabbed the uniform shirt he'd only taken off 2 hours ago. The only question was if he should take his service weapon. Erring on the side of caution, he retrieved it from the lockbox in the nightstand drawer and followed Mutt into the living room. By that point, the dog was practically vibrating as he stood by the door. Okay, Mutt, show me. They slipped out into the darkness without turning on the porch light. Mutt bolted past Connor and headed straight for the house next door. He had no idea what had set the dog off, but they both knew better than to go charging blindly into danger. He snapped an order. Using one of the German commands, Mutt had been trained to obey without question. Fuss! Mutt immediately circled back to park himself next to Connor's left foot, content to let his human partner assess the situation. For several seconds, the normal night sound settled around them. The rustle of leaves in the breeze, the frogs raising their usual racket in a nearby creek, the distant sound of late-night traffic out on the highway. Nothing that triggered any kind of alarm. Then Connor finally heard what Mutt's superior hearing had picked up from inside the house, a child's scream coming from the house next door. Connor charged forward with Mutt loping along at his side. He'd only moved into his house a couple of weeks back, and didn't know his neighbors at all, other than to nod on the few occasions when they crossed paths. As far as he knew, the woman next door lived alone. At least he'd never seen anything that indicated there was a man or child in residence. Not that it mattered who actually lived there. Not when it sounded as if a kid was being terrorized. He circled around the low hedge that separated the two houses. At the same time, he called dispatch to alert them to the situation. No cop liked responding to a possible domestic dispute without backup. In Connor's prior job, help would have been only minutes away. In this rural county in eastern Washington, the deputies on duty might be 50 miles or more from where he stood. Even if close by, they could be caught up in their own situation, so there was no telling how soon they would head his way. The bottom line was Connor and Mutt were on their own. The time it would take for help to arrive could be an eternity of fear and pain for a child. As if to prove his point, another scream rang out, and then another. He gave the dispatcher a bare-bones description of the situation and took off running. Come on, Mutt, let's go. The dog was a silent shadow as they approached the house. Once they reached the porch, Connor edged closer to the front window, hoping to get a glimpse inside before pounding on the door. There was a light on in the hall that led out of the living room to the right. He had to guess that the floor plan of the house was the flip of his own, a small rambler with no basement. If so, that hall led to the two smaller bedrooms and a bathroom. There was a second hall to the left that led to the master bedroom, which had its own full bath. The kitchen and dining area were right behind the living room. When another scream rang out, he banged on the front door and shouted, "Police! Open the door!" It took every ounce of strength Jody had to hold on to Mia as she strove to comfort the distraught little girl. Thank goodness the old rocker was oversized, providing ample space for the two of them. Jody guessed Mia was around 3 to 4 years old, and big enough to be quite a handful when she flailed around in her distress. As a result, Jody's arms ached and her heart hurt as she continued to rock slowly back and forth, hoping Mia would find comfort in the steady rhythm and the soft murmurs of reassurance Jody offered her. The screams were getting farther apart, but that didn't matter much. Based on past experience, the little girl might be regrouping before starting up again. Neither of them had gotten much sleep since Mia had been placed with Jody, and the stress was taking a definite toll on both of them. As she continued rocking, Jody offered up a silent prayer for strength, guidance, and patience.
"Honey, I know you're upset and scared, but I'm here for you."
She brushed her fingers across Mia's cheek, which was flushed red and almost fever hot from exertion. The little girl's breath came in gulps and gasps, her thin body going rigid before she started wailing again. This time, the pitiful noise ended as quickly as it started. The silence was a welcome respite. Jody drew a deep breath and let it out, doing her best to relax in case that would help calm Mia.
"I'm here for you, honey. Let's see if we can get you back to bed. I'll stay close until I know you're all right."
She muscled them both up out of the rocker, but before she could lay Mia down, someone started pounding on the front door. That set off a new round of tears from the little girl and a surge of anger from Jody. Who on earth came knocking on doors at 3 in the morning? No one she was expecting, that was for sure. She crept out of the room and down the short hall to the living room, still cradling Mia in her arms.
"Police! Open the door or we're coming in!"
The police? What was going on that had brought them to her house? Then she glanced down at her small companion and knew. Someone must have heard Mia's screaming and called the authorities. Her stomach lurched. Would they revoke the placement and send the little girl to stay with some other foster family? That was the last thing Mia needed. She'd been through enough already, and another major change might be more than she could handle. The pounding started again, leaving Jody no choice but to respond. She turned on the porch light and then retreated to an arm's length from the door. That put an end to the pounding, but not the demand.
"Open up!
Let me see your badge first."
It only took a few seconds before a badge appeared in the narrow window by the door. It was attached to a blue shirt worn by a man. Should she call 911 to verify the police were responding to a complaint at her address, or simply open the door? The badge was replaced by a man's face, one that looked vaguely familiar. Maybe if she wasn't scared half out of her wits and exhausted, she might have even recognized him before he announced,
"I'm Deputy Dunn. I live next door."
Okay, that made sense. He'd only recently moved in, but she'd seen him a couple of times since the day the moving truck had come and gone. His SUV was in the driveway most mornings and gone in the evening. With everything going on in her own life, she hadn't had the time or energy to wonder if he worked nights or even what he did for a living.
"I recognize you from when you moved in."
"Are you alone, ma'am?"
She nodded.
"It's just me and Mia."
His gaze flicked down toward Mia and back up.
"Are you both all right?"
"Yes, we're fine."
Not really, but she suspected he was concerned that one or both of them had been injured.
"I heard screaming. I need to see for myself that the little girl is okay."
She glanced down at Mia's tear-stained face and wondered what the deputy would think when he saw her. Only one way to find out.
"I'm going to unlock the door now."
She undid the deadbolt and quickly retreated to the other side of the room before calling out,
"Come in!"
The door opened slowly, giving the deputy a chance to scope out the room. His eyes went first to her and then to Mia, who stared back at him with her thumb in her mouth. He pushed the door open farther.
"We're coming in. My dog is a trained police dog and will be searching the house to verify you're not in any danger."
With that, an enormous German shepherd stalked into the room. The deputy quickly scanned the living room and the kitchen beyond, and then patted the dog on the head as he said,
"Voran, She didn't know what the word meant, but the dog sure did. He immediately disappeared down the hall that led to Mia's room and the spare bedroom Jody used for an office. She could hear him sniffing his way from one room to the next. He reappeared in no time and made the same kind of excursion into Jody's bedroom and ensuite bathroom. When he returned, the dog sat down next to Deputy Dunn as if awaiting new orders. If it weren't the middle of an already stressful night, Jody would have found the entire process fascinating. Mutt heard the girl screaming all the way from next door. It wasn't quite an accusation, but it came pretty darn close. With her emotions feeling so raw, Jody fought for a bit of calm before responding. She couldn't afford for this cop to report back to CPS that she wasn't providing adequate care for Mia. "She does that at night, but we're trying to work through it." How much should she tell him? Probably more than she wanted to. But this might not be the only time Mia's distress might disturb the dog's sleep in the middle of the night. "Look, would you like a cup of tea or something? I promise I'll explain." Without waiting for a response, she carried Mia into the kitchen and set her down at the table. "I'll get you some juice, sweetie." Once she'd taken care of her charge, she put the kettle on to boil. By that point, the deputy was on the phone talking to someone named Sophie. After disconnecting the call, he took a seat at the kitchen table across from where Mia sat sipping her juice. Her eyes were huge as she stared first at him and then at the dog who'd taken a seat next to his owner. When Mia smiled at the shepherd, Jody's heart did a stutter step. In the few days since Mia had come to stay with her, she hadn't smiled once, nor had she spoken a single word. Jody might not be comfortable around big dogs, but it was clear that Mia felt differently. "Don't take this wrong, but is he friendly? Your dog, I mean?" The deputy glanced down at his companion. "Mutt recently retired from the canine patrol and came to live with me. As far as I know, the only time he spent around kids was when he used to do community events. He was always patient with them." As if sensing they were talking about him, Mutt looked Jody straight in the eye. It was strange to feel as if she were being judged by the huge dog, but she really hoped that she passed inspection. When she offered him a tenuous smile, he left his owner to join Mia at the other end of the table, laying his huge head in her lap. That brought another smile to the little girl's face as she patted Mutt on the head and softly stroked his fur. The deputy seemed more interested in Jody's response to the interaction than how Mia and Mutt were getting along. "What's wrong?" Jody set a mug of tea down in front of him before taking a seat at the table. "It's the first time I've seen her smile." He shot her a look of complete disbelief. "How is it possible you've never seen your daughter smile?" Before she could answer, Mia scrambled down from her chair and took off down the hall to her bedroom with Mutt hot on her heels. Jody was immediately on her feet and following, with Deputy Dunn right behind her. The two adults stopped in the doorway and watched in astonishment as the little girl climbed back into bed and under the covers. Mutt turned in a circle twice and then curled up on the floor by the bed. Jody didn't know what to do next. It was doubtful the deputy would lend her his dog, but it couldn't hurt to ask. Keeping her voice at a whisper, she leaned closer to him. "Could he maybe stay until she falls asleep?" After a brief hesitation, he slowly nodded. "For a little while. I still need to know what's going on here."
"Thank you."
She spoke louder when she looked across at Mia.
"Mutt will hang out until you fall asleep. Then he has to go home and sleep in his own bed. Do you understand?"
Mia leaned over the edge of the bed to pat the dog again and then nodded.
"I'll leave the lamp on for you."
Jody was all too aware of the police officer following in her footsteps as she led the way back to the kitchen. She figured him to be a shade under 6 feet, about half a foot taller than she was. He also had a slight case of bedhead, the blonde waves flattened more on one side than the other. She felt a small surge of guilt to know he'd been jarred out of a sound sleep when Mia's screams had drawn the dog's attention. By that point, their tea was nearly cold, but he didn't seem all that interested in drinking it anyway. He'd pulled a small notebook from his shirt pocket and then patted his pocket as if looking for a pen. She fetched one from the counter and then sat back down. Okay, what do you need to know?
Start off with the basics. Names, etc., for both you and the girl.
I'm Jody Cruz.
She spelled her name and then rattled off her address and phone number. While he finished writing, she drew a slow breath.
We're calling her Mia. She came to stay with me 3 days ago. I'm her foster mother.
His expression turned grim. What's her family situation?
I wish I could tell you, but we don't know.
Jody took a sip of her tepid tea and grimaced. At least it soothed her parched throat.
She was found abandoned outside County Hospital in the middle of the night. All she had with her was a small backpack that held a few clothes and a stuffed toy. She was sitting alone on a bench near the emergency entrance.
Deputy Dunn was frowning big time by that point. No one saw anything? She shrugged.
The last I heard, the police hadn't found any witnesses, but they're still looking. Evidently, she was dropped off after the night crew came on shift. That helped narrow down the time frame, but that's all. From what the hospital told CPS, there's normally a steady stream of people going in and out of the place, but it turned out to be one of those rare quiet nights. If an orderly from the evening shift hadn't come back for something he'd forgotten, there's no telling how long Mia would have been out there on that bench.
How scared must she have been sitting there alone in the chilly darkness? Jody had her own experience with guardian angels protecting the innocent, and she could only be grateful that one must have been watching over Mia that night. I'm guessing there weren't any security cameras in the area?
Not in that particular area, or at least that's what I was told.
What does Mia have to say about what happened?
Nothing.
Dunn set his pen down, the disbelief in his icy blue eyes all too clear. I'm not great at guessing how old a kid is, but even I know she's old enough to talk. What does she say when you ask about her parents? Jody found herself praying for patience for a second time that night.
Our best guess is that she's somewhere between 3 and 4 years old. So yes, she is plenty old enough to talk. She just won't. The doctors say there's no obvious physical reason they can find for her silence, so we're pretty sure it's trauma-related.
She offered him a rueful smile.
You know firsthand that her vocal cords work, but sadly the only sound she makes is when she wakes up screaming at night. The social worker and I have tried other things. If we ask her to write her name, she only scribbles. When we ask her where her family is, she draws a car. If we ask about her mother, she shakes her head. We don't know what that means. It could be she doesn't have one, or that she doesn't know where she is. She gets more upset when we ask about her father.
Any signs of abuse?
Not any obvious ones. No bruises, scars, or anything like that. The doctor who examined her in the ER described her as well-nourished, if that means anything.
Any fingerprints on the stuff she had with her?
If they've learned something useful, I haven't heard about it. Maybe the tests were inconclusive.
Anything else I should know? Jody shook her head.
Only that I'm sorry she woke you up, Deputy Dunn. I'm hoping the screaming will stop once she realizes she's safe with me.
Might as well call me Connor. The offer was said a bit grudgingly, but she took it as a sign she had gone from being a suspect to, well, she wasn't sure what exactly. Regardless, somewhere in the last few minutes, his demeanor had changed. He seemed less confrontational and more concerned.
If you'll call me Jody,
she offered him a small smile.
I appreciate that you and Mutt came running when you thought a child was in danger.
It's my job.
That was true, but she doubted that his job description included letting his dog stand guard so a scared little girl could go back to sleep.
Rather than point that out, Jody stood up.
I'll go check on Mia. Hopefully she's settled in for the night so you and Mutt can get some sleep.
Once again, he followed after her, explaining the dog might not leave unless Connor ordered him to stand down. To Jody's relief, Mia was sound asleep, her face peaceful and relaxed. When she started toward the bed, Connor put his hand on her shoulder to stop her.
Let me.
When he stepped around her, Mutt opened his eyes and focused all his attention on his owner. Connor softly whispered a word that sounded like, "Hoose." She wasn't sure what it meant, but the dog lurched to his feet and silently followed his owner out of the room and down the hall to the living room. Before Connor opened the door, he scribbled something on a piece of paper from his notebook and held it out.
I mostly work evenings, but I can get called out any time they need me. Here's my direct phone number. Don't hesitate to use it. You know, just in case. She was still trying to figure out in case of what, when he and Mutt disappeared into the darkness outside, pausing only to issue one last command. Lock the door. Jody was too tired to object to being ordered around. Instead, she did as he said before heading back to check on Mia one last time, before seeking out her own bed. 2. Both Connor and Mutt had been too wound up to go right back to bed after leaving Jody's place. Instead, they'd enjoyed a long walk along the stream on the other side of the road. It had taken an hour to burn off the adrenaline rush before returning home. On the way back, he'd stopped to study Jody's house for a few seconds. It was a relief to see the lights were off in both the kitchen and living room. With luck, that meant the woman and the little girl were sound asleep. He hoped so, for their sakes. Jody Cruz had looked as if it had been days since she'd gotten any rest. Her shoulder-length hair had been a messy halo of dark curls. Coupled with the circles under her brown eyes, there had been a waif-like look about her that stirred his protective instincts to life. When it had come time to leave, he'd had to fight against a powerful urge to stand guard over her, the same way Mutt had done for Mia. However, his job was to assess the situation, especially regarding the little girl's safety. One way or another, he needed to remain impartial. As a result, sleep hadn't come easily for him even after the walk. He couldn't quit thinking about Mia and wondering what kind of person would have dumped off a kid like that. Experience had taught him that sometimes desperate people did desperate things. But if there was a legitimate reason they could no longer care for Mia, why not ask for help? Granted, they'd left her outside a hospital, but that was no guarantee that she'd be found by someone who could be trusted to do the right thing. So why there? And why in the middle of the night? Without those answers, it would be impossible to know if there was danger dogging the little girl's footsteps. Regardless, something had traumatized her to the point she either wouldn't or couldn't talk. Whatever it was had to be the reason behind those terrified screams. It wasn't Connor's case, but he still wanted to see what he could learn about it. With that in mind, he left for work early in case he could catch the investigating detective at his desk. Luck was with him. Although he was still getting to know the other deputies and detectives, he'd already crossed paths with Jack Galloway on another case. The detective was on the phone when Connor walked in, but he smiled and motioned for him to have a seat. After he hung up, Jack leaned back in his chair, the springs creaking loudly. He was a big guy, probably in his early 50s, judging by his salt and pepper hair and the deep lines around his eyes and mouth.
"What can I do for you, deputy?"
"I was wondering what you could tell me about the little girl who was found abandoned outside County Hospital." Jack sat up straighter as he went on point.
"What's your interest?"
Connor hastened to assure the man he wasn't meaning to tread on anyone's toes. "I had to go back to Seattle for a few days to testify in a trial and was out of town when she was found. As a result, I missed the whole thing, but it turns out she's fostering with the woman who lives next door to me."
"And?"
Connor didn't want to cause his neighbor any problems, so he chose his words carefully. "And I wanted to find out if there's anything I should keep an eye out for while she's staying there." Jack eased back in his chair again, looking more relaxed.
"So far we're drawing a complete blank on who she is and where she came from. If that kid has any family, they're not doing anything to find her. Her prints aren't in any database, although we keep checking. We've sent DNA samples to be tested, but it's only been a few days, and no results so far."
"And no idea where she came from at all?" Jack's frustration was obvious.
"Nope. We've checked all the cameras in the area around the hospital, but it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. Even if we did get a shot of the vehicle she was in, we might not be able to see her considering how short she is."
"We sent her backpack and everything in it to the lab to see what they can find, but I'm not holding out a lot of hope at this point. We've got feelers out with various agencies in the region, but no one has anything useful to say so far." All that meshed with what Jody had told Connor, which reassured him at least a little. He felt really sorry for the kid. Mia had to be feeling lost and terrified, surrounded as she was by strangers, and having no idea where her family had gone. He and Mutt would definitely be keeping an eye on things next door.
Well, I appreciate the information. If I can do anything to help, let me know.
Will do.
Jack hesitated a second before asking,
What can you tell me about your neighbor? What's she like?
I don't know her at all, but she seemed nice enough. I only moved into my house a week or so ago. I've been working evenings, so I don't see much of my neighbors. Jack reached for a file from the stack on his desk, an obvious hint that he needed to get back to work.
Got it. Thanks for letting me know that you're nearby the kid, though. Until we learn more about the situation, we're not sure what to expect.
Connor couldn't help but agree. They might not know specifics, but it was a pretty fair guess that whatever had led to Mia ending up on that bench hadn't been anything good. For now, he needed to get out on the road. Thanks to Mutt's help getting Mia back to bed, Jody enjoyed a solid 6 hours of sleep herself. As a result, she'd woken up feeling more rested than she had in days. She and Mia enjoyed bowls of oatmeal for breakfast, although the little girl still seemed puzzled over why they had to wait to eat until after Jody said the blessing. Even so, she sat quietly and waited for the okay to dig in. It reminded Jody of her own experience back when she'd been placed in foster care. At least she'd been in her early teens, and more capable of understanding her foster parents' explanation of what was happening. After breakfast, she helped Mia get dressed. She'd arrived with only the bare minimum of clothing, so Jody planned to go online later and order a few more items to supplement her meager wardrobe. Meanwhile, she'd asked Mia to play in her room while Jody showered and got ready to face the day. Mia's caseworker was coming by later in the morning to check on them both, and she wanted to look her best. It was hard not to be anxious about the upcoming visit. To keep herself busy, Jody decided to ask Mia to help her bake some muffins. It wasn't the first time she'd enlisted the little girl's help in the kitchen, figuring it was a fun way for the two of them to spend time together. Besides, offering refreshments to Mrs. Caldwell seemed like a nice thing to do. Like most people in her profession, the woman was no doubt overworked and underpaid. She also routinely dealt with kids and families that were in crisis mode. Maybe a cup of coffee and a fresh baked muffin would provide a positive moment in the midst of all that other stuff.
Mia, do you want to help me bake muffins for when Mrs. Caldwell comes to visit us this morning?
The little girl dropped the crayon she'd been drawing with and scampered into the kitchen. She dragged the closest chair from the table over to the counter and climbed up next to Jody. When she tried to hand Mia a spoon, the little girl frowned and looked around the kitchen before finally pointing toward a drawer on the other side of the stove. She hadn't done that before.
What is it you need?
It was too much to hope that Mia would simply answer the question. Instead, she scrambled back down and headed toward the drawer. After yanking it open, she pulled out one of the large kitchen towels that were stored there. Then she did her best to wrap it around her waist like an apron. When it kept falling off, Jody helped her tie it securely.
Good idea, Mia. We should both wear aprons.
Jody got her own out of the drawer and put it on before lifting Mia back up on the chair. At the same time, she wondered who had taught Mia about aprons and that a dish towel could be used in a pinch.
Do you always wear an apron when you cook?
When Mia nodded, she asked another question.
Do you like to cook?
That brought a small smile to the little girl's face. Jody debated asking a few more yes or no questions, but decided against it for the moment. Mia was clearly excited about getting to help, and pressing for answers might ruin the experience for her. Better to enjoy the moment and hope that Mia would eventually come to trust Jody with her secrets. She set the oven to preheat and then got out the ingredients they'd need for the muffins. When everything was arranged, she picked up a container of blueberries in one hand and a Granny Smith apple in the other.
What do you think, Mia? Would she like blueberry or apple cinnamon better?
Mia immediately pointed toward the blueberries. Jody put the apple back in the bowl and set the container of berries down in front of Mia.
Would you like to eat a couple to make sure they'll make good muffins?
After carefully picking out 3 berries, Mia popped them in her mouth. As soon as she swallowed them, she rubbed her tummy and nodded. The little rascal might not talk, but she still managed to get her opinions across.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?